This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Swipe, swipe, scan, scan. Most of us have given very little thought to the software or even the hardware that allows us to pay for our purchases at the till or even digitally. Today, we speak to one of the earliest players in this field to see if they are able to ride the digital payment boom or are they going to be left behind in this fintech race. Sean Hesh, CEO from listed GHL Group, joins us to answer this and more. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Shannon. Thank you for having me this morning.
Why wasn't GHL one of the 29 contenders for the 5 Malaysian digital banking licenses up for grabs?
Well, you know, Shannon, that was a question that I was asked when I joined the company at first. Oh, Sean, you're from Citibank. You must be here to apply for that magical license. And, you know, we made a very conscious decision up front that we would not ourselves be part of any consortium or directly apply for one of these licenses. We see ourselves as an infrastructure player, provider to all banks. We partner with many banks, brick and mortar banks, and we look forward to partnering with future digital banks in Malaysia and in our other markets that we operate in. So we see ourselves more so as providing that infrastructure to make these digital ventures successful. They're still going to need a payment processing arm, and we believe we're well suited to provide them with that capability.
So in a way, were you trying to avoid being a competitor to them and perhaps disrupting existing relationships you have? Did that outweigh the possible synergistic opportunities from getting a digital banking license though?
So certainly that played some role in our decision, but that wasn't the only driver. Frankly, we as GHL, we are not a bank. We don't have the subject matter expertise to become a bank. Really, it's not our forte, and I wouldn't want us to be in a situation where we are not capable to deliver as many of these phenomenally good consortiums are committing to deliver.
So even as the software provider together, perhaps with another player that does have the expertise in the banking space that was not considered at all, did anybody approach you? I'm curious.
We got approached a number of times by a number of different consortiums, and we made a very clear decision that we didn't want to partner, but anyone who is a winner of this license, we welcome partnering with them and trying to assist them with their payment needs.
Okay, let's move into the weeds of GHL and the revenue breakdown, right? So three main divisions: transaction payment acquisitions, TPA, terminals or shared services and solutions. I want to start with TPA because that's still 60% of your revenue, right, Sean? Now, that consists of e-pay services and e-payment services. But COVID-19 has probably hit this division hard. So when will we see revenue expansion? Because I'm sure the continued cycles of lockdowns would have impacted both the merchant acquisition and also customers who are reluctant to return to shops.
Our latest release quarter, we had a very reasonable quarter. I think our revenues were up over 30% year over year. Our profits were up nearly 15% year over year. And, you know, all of our business segments individually were up. So we take pride in that, frankly. And I think we had a good quarter despite a very difficult economic condition and the lockdowns that continue to persist in all of the markets that we operate in. You need to keep in mind, we are a consumer-based business. When consumers spend for, you know, essentials, for travel and entertainment, for, you know, food, restaurants, all of that adds to our revenues, to our base. And, you know, with the lockdowns, pretty much the entire month of, you know, months of April, May, June in Malaysia, in Philippines, in Thailand, we still had stellar results. Really a testament to our resilience as a company as well, because we have diversified means of generating these revenues, and that has proven to be extremely useful in adverse economic times as we have experienced the last few months.
Now, the other thing that I think COVID-19 has brought to the fore is the need to shift to cashless transactions, right? And I want to see this from three dimensions. So you've got customers, merchants, and also regulatory and governments pushing more terminal rollouts, especially in Malaysia, giving e-wallet grants. How is GHL monetizing this opportunity to prepare for the future? Because in the past, you had this legacy business very tied to the use of the hardware. So how are you creating more recurring income? Because I'm sure there must be some saturation in terms of how many terminals you can actually have.
So I think when I look at what is happening in Malaysia as a market specifically, there are multiple things happening. And, you know, I think the e-payments industry in Malaysia is expecting to grow quite tremendously. It's estimated to be growing at about 35% annually. EDC terminals, what we started our business in, is expected to grow at somewhere in the range of 10 to 15% annually. E-commerce itself as a segment, if we look at it, is expected to grow over 20% annually. And, you know, if you look at the TPV, transaction payment value that we refer to, or some refer to it as GMV in the industry, in 2020, the digital TPV in Malaysia grew by, I think, 110, 120%. So huge opportunity for growth in this market. And really, when you look at the multiple government initiatives that are also feeding into it, all of these add to consumers wanting to use their digital wallets, their digital payment methods. And every time someone uses does a digital transaction, it adds to the revenues that GHL provides sees. So that's really an area we see Malaysia as a huge opportunity for growth, especially this My Digital initiative that the government announced earlier this year.
You can see top line growing, definitely. But do you see margin compression coming ahead of you? I mean, one example of that will probably be the merchant discount rate, which is how you make your profit from your e-payment service revenue. And there's an increasing proliferation of usage of debit cards and also QR codes where you make less money. And I see more and more people moving towards that. So how are you going to, you know, attract or at least maintain these wonderful margins that you have had over, which are 30% for the last 10 years? How do you maintain it, if not grow it? Is it down to the right product mix?
So product mix definitely plays a role in, you know, our bottom line. And frankly, despite the margin compression that you talked about, and it's very well known in the merchant acquiring industry, we have managed to retain our margins quite consistently at about 35 to 40%, which is very good for a company doing what we do. At a group level, our gross profit margin is roughly around 45 or thereabouts, and we have been able to maintain that year over year as well. So I think because of the way we essentially have our partnerships with our bank partners, our margins tend to remain quite healthy and strong, despite the fact that overall there is a shrinkage in MDR rates.
Yeah, what about the online e-commerce space though? How attractive is that to you? Because I noticed one of you're not so visible in that space versus, let's say, your competitor Revenue Group, who has Lazada as their main partner. Is this a business or a segment that GHL wants to conquer?
Absolutely. And listen, I think we have a very robust product called EGHL. We are continuing to invest in EGHL, and we believe it to be a key driver for us as sort of the consumer preference shifts from cash to digital and then to e-commerce furthermore. I think e-commerce in the AP region is, in fact, the fastest growing region globally, and it's growing in the range of 22 to 35%, and it varies from market to market depending where you go. In Malaysia, we're somewhere in the range of 20 to 30% probably, and then Philippines, 25 to 30 as well. And then Thailand is a little bit less. Indonesia, which is our other market, is about a 30 to 35%. It's at the high end of that growth. So, and we also see the online spending per person growing. So all of these are really good signs. Our GHL platform is quite robust. We had our highest month in March. We processed over 1 billion ringgit on eGHL. It was a phenomenal month for us. We are looking forward to converting a lot more transactions. And all these initiatives that we talked about that the government is pushing, I think is going to help us. We're very much in the forefront of working with the government on some of these initiatives and working with partners.
But the merchant acquisition strategy doesn't seem to be very focused on the big e-commerce players. Is there a reason for that?
The higher you go on the food chain, on the pyramid, I think the margins are smaller. So we have, again, very deliberately decided to play in the tier three and tier four segments and not in the tier one, tier two, where you mentioned, I think, Lazada. It doesn't mean we don't have high volume clients, but we try to focus mostly on the lower part of that pyramid.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Sean Hash, CEO of Listed GHL Group. When we come back, how does this payment processor fare against the competition? And does it have a lazy balance sheet? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill, where in the hot seat this morning is Sean Hash, CEO of GHL Group. Just a moment ago, we were discussing the merits of their new business model and whether it will help transition the group from legacy hardware to riding the digital payment boom. I've been reading a lot about your value-added services. So let's spend a bit of time on that. You've launched Grow, which is to cross-sell more products to be sold by merchants, including insurance and wealth management services. How much of this will really be contributing eventually to the bottom line? Or is this just an initiative because you have existing merchants anyway, but don't expect much in terms of revenue?
I would not say by any stretch that Grow is a hobby for us. We have, however, looked at Grow and refocused Grow on areas and on potential opportunities that fit our business better than was originally conceived. Grow continues to be a supermarket of financial and non-financial products and services that we can add to our offering to our client base. Now, having said that, we're looking at Grow as an umbrella product under which we can offer, for example, loans, direct loans to SMEs. We're looking at buy now, pay later opportunities. We are looking at a product we just released, as a matter of fact, last week called Cardit. So these are three very distinct different products that we're looking to offer under the Grow umbrella that really fit well with what our core competency is and enables us to generate more revenues from the same set of merchants that we have existing relationships with.
But does this change your business model, though, because you would then have to be slightly more capital intensive going forward if you're going to do loans? I mean, some of your competitors, albeit in the consumer space, they have decided to do it on a consortium basis with someone else providing the capital.
You know, if you look at our balance sheet, you see we have a fairly good sum of cash in our balance sheet.
200 million as of June.
Correct. So we're looking to utilize that cash, at least partly and initially, for some of these ventures. So I just gave you an example for a SME-facing product. I'll talk about other consumer products, consumer-facing products, such as buy now, pay later. I'm sure you've heard a lot of buy now, pay later players just out there grabbing market share. And guess what? We get approached by them all the time. We partner with them. We believe in the partnership model. I think that is actually probably the key success model for us as a company in this digital world that we're moving into. But that also leads me to think, you know, if they're all coming to us, we must have something that they all like. Well, yes, we have 400,000 relationships that they're knocking on our door for. We have the access. We don't have the platform to do that, but maybe we can gain access to that platform through a partnership. So we're looking to utilize the cash that we have in our balance sheet, and that's one way of using it, as well as the SME financing that we just talked about.
So is that why the company has no dividend policy and it hasn't had one since, I think, inception? Are you saving all this money for, like, I suppose, the eventual move towards this? Because if I look at, you know, the financials, and I always do, the return on equity is a sluggish 6%. And if you actually paid out dividends or had a dividend policy, it would be much higher. So I don't know whether, since you're not using the money, why let it be a lazy balance sheet?
So thanks for calling it a lazy balance sheet. It actually is not. We are saving for a worthy cause. And I just gave you two examples, but we also have further regional aspirations. And, you know, we currently operate in four markets, Malaysia, Philippines, Thailand, and Indonesia. And we would love to be able to look at other ASEAN markets as well as expand within some of these existing markets. I wouldn't say it's lazy cash. It's going to be good to put to good use, hopefully soon.
Yeah, talking about your regional expansion plans, I mean, they've been in place since 2006. There were plans for it to be a 50-50 split, so 50% contribution from Malaysia and then the rest of the world 50%. But if we look at what the most recent set of results, 2021, Malaysia is still 86% in terms of contribution to earnings. And there was even a write-off recently of 12 million ringgit from a Cambodian investment. Why has the track record been patchy?
So I think you will see perhaps a different GHL on a go-forward basis. You may call it patchy. I would say we need to select our opportunities better on a go-forward basis. A few of the products that I've mentioned to you are opportunities where we can expand into and actually expand into these markets where we have existing footprint and expand more rapidly in. And furthermore, look at opportunities for potential partnerships, M&A, joint ventures in some of the other markets. So we are looking at multiple opportunities extremely busy, I would say, as a management team in evaluating these opportunities on a go-forward basis.
And I suppose this is in response to the intensive competition we are seeing both in the e-pay segment space and also the e-payment space. So we look at the e-pay space. I mean, that's very lucrative. Margins at 36%. But, you know, at the same time, the telcos are ramping up to sell directly to subscribers. And then there are alternative channels like GrabPay or even the banks. So are you concerned about your ability to hang on to market share? Because if I'm not wrong, you probably are like one of the top players.
We are the top player in that area. Our ePay business is one of our oldest and one of the most successful business lines that we have. You're absolutely correct in your assessment that everybody's nibbling at this pie and the potential of the pie shrinking does exist. Our expansion plans are not necessarily in reaction to this. I firmly believe competition is a good thing. It'll force us to be nimble. It'll force us to act smart. It forces us to create and be a lot more creative than we have been. So I welcome the competition. We'll respond well to it. And we'll use the cash to come up with other creative ideas to generate revenues for this business.
Now, another risk to GHL is, of course, data breaches or cyber attacks. What do you have in place to prevent this?
If you're in the industry that I've been for the last few decades, data breaches are probably the one thing you lose sleep over. It is the most unfortunate thing that can happen to a business. We take our responsibility to our consumers, to our business clients, as well as to our partners extremely seriously. We protect our data with the best in encryption methodology, and best in cloud server technology, and we protect the data via multiple different means, including two-factor authentication in case of a transaction taking place. So we feel we're doing a lot of the right things. Is there room for improvement? We always reevaluate. There's new technologies coming up regularly that we look at and we try and implement.
But I understand, Sean, there was a report of a data breach in February this year, right? Can you provide some clarity on this?
Sure. And, you know, we were very transparent with the issue that happened. Just to be clear, even though it became public this early this year, the breach, we believe, actually happened towards the end of 2019, early 2020. Unbeknownst to us, it had happened in January of 2020 through some of our own regular exercises of validating our platforms and systems. We realized that there may be an issue, and we went ahead and did a patch for the problem, and we secured the platform. We are not necessarily sure what was taken out, or if anything valuable was taken out. Pretty much everything we have in that platform is encrypted. That said, as a result, we have taken further action and we have actually segregated our databases. We keep data in multiple servers, pieces of data in multiple servers, so you cannot put two and two together, in other words. So we're taking all the right measures. We have we spent quite a bit of money in not only bringing the right talent on board, but also in bringing in the right technologies to help us do that.
Okay, and finally, I want to talk about the share price. It's up close to 50% on a one-year basis. I think year-to-date, it's still below 5%. But, you know, it's done pretty well. It's 50% compared to the FBM Hermes, which is just up 5%. So strong performance on that one-year basis. But I look at Bloomberg, and the forward PEs, price-earning ratios, is 63 times. If anything, shouldn't this be a signal for me to sell rather than to buy GHL stock?
Well, you know, I don't know if you've seen or not, some of the market analysts are actually putting a buy on our stock. I'd like to think they, like myself and the management team, recognize the great opportunity that is ahead of us as GHL Systems in this region. Really, as I look at our sort of must-win battles, and I'm sure the market views the same, you know, we have the opportunity to further digitize and capture, you know, majority of the transactions that are still cash-based. 70% of the transactions happening in this region are
still cash. So you're basically saying GHL is the best proxy to cashless payments and the e-commerce boom that we are facing in this region?
Absolutely.
But then, at the same time, you had a substantial shareholder, Credor. They were a private equity fund. They raised their stake to above 12% early last year to then sell down to below 5%, all within 1 year, less than a year. Do they know something that we don't?
You know what? I'm sure you know private equity is quite well. They come in, they invest, they take their profit, and they've moved on. I think, you know, most of the private equities that have invested in GHL have come and gone a few times over the period of time. So I wouldn't be surprised if our friends at Credor come back again.
For the third time.
For the third time, correct. So we're looking forward to, other opportunities.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Sean Hash, CEO of GHL Group. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.